You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. I am your host, Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today's date, or this is being recorded, on the 24th of October, 2023. And last week, if you recall, I dealt with the claim that this is something, the invasion of Israel via Hamas, by Hamas, was something that the current prime minister of Israel knew about, and even beyond that, Michael Chosudovsky's claim that Hamas is his creation, maybe not his personally, but the creation of the IDF and or Mossad. And there's a few non-specialists making this claim, especially from the certain elements of the patriotic community. And I explained in as much detail as I could stuff into 30 minutes why I don't believe that that's true. But this isn't the first time we've dealt with this question. Many times, going back to when I first started, has this come up. This is an ongoing issue. What's different in 2022 and 2023 is that it has been raised to a spectacle. It has almost become a part of the cultural landscape. The Ukraine war and this particular Hamas-Israel war have that character. Now, the last time I spoke up directly about Hamas, or specifically the Gaza Strip, was a show that came out on the 26th of August, 2021. And it shed some light as to what's happening now, because what's happening now is not particularly interesting. It's been done over and over and over again. It's mainstream now to condemn Israel. I still can't get over the fact that 300 people attacked the Capitol building, and there's no January 6th style inquisition, meaning that it's purely ideological and purely corrupt. But regardless of that, the talk about cutting Gaza off, blockading it from everything, is nothing new. That started in 2007. The full blockade of the Gaza Strip from air, land, and sea. Currently, the unemployment's about 60%, and it's a youthful area. There are 3 million people crammed into a 2 to 3 million crammed into an area about 25 miles long. And half of the population is under 18. And I said last week, many others have said, that this is an open-air prison. This is also an open-air gas camp because of the white phosphorus. Gaza's food supply, water, electricity, medicine, building materials are severely restricted and have been since 2007. I guess the only difference is that they were able to clamp down on it to a great extent. I also said last week that they have nothing to lose. Now, back in 2021, the operation was called the Guardian of the Walls, which was almost a mocking reference to the wall that surrounds the land aspect of the Gaza Strip. And the population there, about 10% is Christian, and they are almost entirely refugees, forcibly prevented from returning home. Israeli tanks, and back then about 80 aircraft, F-35s, were being deployed against people who were already conquered and occupied since 1967. The regime continues to present this as if there are two sides. There's not. There's Israel, and then there's a conquered population. In other words, Gaza has no air force, it has no navy, it has no control over its borders, it has no control over its coastline, it has certainly no control over what there is of an economy. And if it wasn't for Egypt brokering a ceasefire, after 11 days of bombing, that would have continued. But again, this happens pretty much every other year. And the campaign back then, in 2021, the Gaza campaign then, was preceded by the ethnic cleansing campaign occurring in East Jerusalem. The threatened, almost mocking evictions of dozens of families from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood sparked protests all over the place. And that started on May 2nd, 2021. We've spoken of this before, too. 26 families from their homes in that area. They are refugees. The term Nakba refers to the 1947-49 expulsion, and the Israelis are already talking about a new one now. And, you know, the Palestinians don't have many places to go. They have no place, they don't have any place to go except the United Nations. The United Nations usually condemns this stuff, but the UN is about as significant as international law is. What people forget sometimes is that more than any other country in the world, the Jewish control of the media means that the PR coming straight out of Tel Aviv gets trumpeted everywhere. Back when they were kicking people out of homes in East Jerusalem, they made the make-believe claim that these homes were all owned by Jews at one point, which was a lie, a knowing lie, because Jordan had financed the construction of those homes. The settlers, since at least the 1970s, and it's not just in the countryside, not just in the desert, it's also in urban areas, in Sheikh Jarrah, among other places, the West Bank, has been battling the Palestinians, and they've been filing lawsuits with make-believe maps and everything. These were owned by Jews at one point. Now, what that would have to do with people living there now is a separate issue. And the Israeli courts have been pretty even-handed. We also talked about Netanyahu's judicial reforms, which got him into so much trouble. The invasion did nothing to help him. I don't believe he thought it would. I don't believe he knew about it in advance. There is very good reason for that being unguarded, and we talked about it last week. We refer to last week's show as to why, and people are forgetting how thin the IDF and other security services are. Propaganda is one of its more important weapons. So every kind of terror from private sector as well as state sector activists has been used, and since Netanyahu's coalition with what they call the extreme Zionists, this has increased like never before. Trusadovsky goes back to 2009. Cast Lead was the operation from 2008, which was a military intelligence agenda, and it was formulated by Ariel Sharon in 2001. He was prime minister back then. And as Israel was negotiating a ceasefire with Hamas, they only used that negotiation period as a way to mobilize their own forces. Cast Lead was a deliberate deception. And in fact, it was November 4th, the day of the American presidential elections, that Israel broke that ceasefire. And they did to the Gaza Strip exactly what they're doing right now. Again, nothing new here. Absolutely nothing new. A few years ago, you had Israeli Air Force pilots talking about flattening Palestinian residential areas. They're not denying that they're bombing civilian areas. The hospital story, I'm not sure, you know, it gets this extraordinary amount of exposure, but they've been bombing hospitals for years. And it's not just a matter of the physical toll, but the mental toll it takes on people who are living in the worst kind of poverty imaginable, with the full knowing acceptance of the American population. The only thing that Hamas is doing is responding. Every other year or so, there's a massive bombing campaign against a group of people who aren't employed, who don't work. Have nothing but anger. So no matter how far back you go, it's the same thing. Meir Dagan, who was the director of the Mossad back in 2008, initiated this Operation Cast Lead. And it started with a huge PR campaign under the foreign ministry. And it became clear that specifically that the Hamas infrastructure wasn't the main target. Cast Lead was about civilian casualties. The official ideology of Zionism is based on the Talmudic conception of a goyim being far less valuable than Jews. Now, it doesn't matter if it's in a religious caste or a secular caste, it leads to the same kind of policies. I've said before, many times before, that the fear over Iraq or Iran's nuclear program has nothing to do with weaponry. They're well aware that you really can't switch over peaceful nuclear power to weapons production. Those aren't the same plans. I said this many times. No, it's to keep them poor. They were well aware that they were diversifying their economy on the verge of the first world, especially Iraq. And this is why there was this, you know, the assassinations over and over again in Iran, and the destruction of Saddam Hussein's civilian reactor policy. A few years ago, I did have a paper and a show on Arrow Air Flight 1285, where 256 American soldiers were killed and Gander in Newfoundland, in Canada. No investigation was ever really engaged in. The U.S. said no terrorism was involved, but never said what happened. I'm saying to myself, well, who has this kind of power? Who has the power to shut everything down? Who has the power to stymie any investigation? Mossad brought it down for the same reason it attacked the Liberty. The soldiers were coming home from camp, enforcing the Camp David Accords. This is in 1985. And special forces were on board who were supposed to go into Iraq and blow up nuclear reactors there. They didn't do it. In fact, a few Americans got killed, but they pulled the mission was aborted. Not only does the Israelis really hate the Camp David Accord, especially the Likud Party, but they really hated the fact that the U.S. pulled back from the Iraq operation and, as a result, punished the U.S. by killing its soldiers. Nothing about that makes any sense. But whether it be Iraq, Syria, Libya, Sudan, or the Gaza Strip, the Zionists aren't worried so much about the military apparatus, but they need to keep them absolutely poor. Meir Dagan, who created the Dagan Plan, again, director of Mossad back in 2008, here's how he talked about the long-term objective of this. And the plan is still largely in force. It's the expulsion of Palestinians from their lands. And here's what he said. This is actually quoted by Gali Hassan from Ershlonsky. And he says, it's meant to terrorize a civilian population, assuring maximal destruction of property and cultural resources. The daily life of the Palestinians must be rendered unbearable. They should be locked up in cities and towns, prevented from exercising normal economic life, cut off from workplaces, schools, and hospitals. This will encourage immigration and weaken the resistance to future expulsions. And in fact, that came out in 2005. So this had been going on for a long time. Dagan, the Dagan Plan, was older, of course, in 2008. Operation Cast Lead was one aspect of it. It's a broader military intelligence operation coming from Ariel Sharon. And another aspect of this was Operation Justified Vengeance. And this is when they used the F-16s to bomb Palestinian cities. And according to Jane's Foreign Report, this is actually 2001, the Israeli army under Ariel Sharon, we all know what his reputation was, had plans to completely smash the Palestinian Authority, force out Arafat, and kill and detain its armed wing. And of course, they eventually murdered Arafat. It's a justification of bloodshed. And the killing of Palestinian civilians, and this is a quote, was justified on humanitarian grounds. Now, in 2001, there was an article in Global Research that said the assault would be launched at the government's discretion after a big suicide bomb attack in Israel, causing widespread deaths and injuries, citing the bloodshed as justification. So, justified vengeance is another word for Dagon plan. And he was a reserve general. He was also Sharon's national security advisor during the 2000 election campaign there. And it was drawn up, of course, you know, it's older than its actual operation. Even it predates Sharon's election as prime minister in very early 2001. And it was very simple and very clear. It was meant to destroy the PA as well as, and this is prior to Hamas's takeover election in the Gaza Strip, and eventually murder Yasser Arafat. More specifically, it was to cantonize, in other words, a canton, like how Switzerland is organized. Cantonization, a variation of Balkanization of the Palestinian territories, cutting off the West Bank and Gaza from one another. Now, I said last week that the argument that Netanyahu financed Hamas while strangling the economy was meant to have the West Bank and Gaza at each other's throats. And that was true very briefly, actually, within the Gaza Strip after the 06 elections. But for the most part, since then, the Palestinians, you know, the PA on the one side and Hamas on the other, have cooperated far more than they've clashed. So if that was the plan, it failed miserably. So the theory was separating them. They would then negotiate separately with any Palestinian militia dominant in any specific territory. The Palestinian forces are responsible for any kind of security or intelligence. So it's meant to pit Palestinians against one another. And then Dagon himself, after the 2000 elections, had a key role in developing this. So the situation with Netanyahu, with these ultra-Zionists, again, nothing new. Nothing new here. And he was reconfirmed in his position again, years later, by Ehud Olmert. And the Beirut settlement slaughters, Dagon had worked with Ariel Sharon, raids on Palestinian settlements in Lebanon, and the 2009 ground invasion of Gaza has an almost identical resemblance to that 1982 attack on Lebanon led by Dagon and Sharon. Now, Chasudovsky does a very good job, despite my disagreement with him, of laying the historical foundation here, at least in recent times, 21st century. November 2004, Yasser Arafat was murdered. It was called Operation Fields of Thorns. It was formulated, I think, in 1996. And there is a document from October 2000 that was created at the request of the Prime Minister, Barak, Ehud Barak, saying that Arafat the person is a severe threat to the security of the State of Israel, and the damage which will result from his disappearance is less than the damage caused by his existence. And that was quoted by Tanya Reinhart. The details of the document were published in Marif, July 6, 2001. So the Israeli cabinet, condemned by the United Nations, by the way, ordered the hit on Arafat. It was, of course, approved by the U.S. The defense minister at the time in 2003, Shaul Mofaz, declared the total all-out war on militants. And let me quote here from an article from called Roadmap for a Deceased Plan, rather than a Peace Plan, Trish Shaw, in 2005. She says this. In mid-September, Israel's government passed a law to get rid of Arafat. Israel's Cabinet for Political Security Affairs declared it a decision to remove Arafat as an obstacle to peace. Mofaz threatened, "We will choose the right way and the right time to kill Arafat." Palestinian Minister Saeb Erekat told CNN that he thought Arafat was the next target. CNN then asked Sharon's spokesman, Ranan Ghassan, if the vote meant expulsion of Arafat. Ghassan clarified, "It doesn't mean that. The cabinet has today resolved to remove this obstacle. The time, the method, the ways by which this will take place will be decided separately, and the security services will monitor the situation and make the recommendation about proper action." The Gan plan, whose origins are 2000-2001, included the murder of Yasser Arafat, and it was meant to destroy the Palestinian Authority. The foment divisions within the Fatah organization, the armed wing of the PLO, and of course between Fatah and Hamas. Fatah, actually the political party of what used to be called the PLO. Mahmoud Abbas, of course, runs it now, and many Arabs then and now say that he is a Palestinian cooperator, installed as leader of Fatah with the approval of both Israel and the U.S. And the U.S. helps finance the Palestinian Authority's security forces. Now, this is curious. And actually, I dealt with this at the time. I've dealt with it subsequently. In 2005, many of you remember that Jewish settlements in Gaza were pulled back. 7,000 Jews were pulled out of the region. Now, he presented it as if he's responding to pressure, how violent the settlers are, stealing everything, not working, subsidized, simply killing machines. And on the news, it showed Israeli soldiers pulling hysterical settlers out of their homes. He also said that, well, you know, in the final settlement, we won't be able to hold on to these anyway. And he even went so far as to say in 2004, he said, "I'm working on the assumption that in the future there will be no Jews in Gaza." And at the time, I didn't think much of it. I thought maybe it was a, you know, two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. But the settlements in Gaza show up in Washington's roadmap to peace back then. And the Palestinians even declared this a victory. Now, Chosudovsky makes a very clear point. It was an operation. Today, Gaza is a open-air concentration camp. No one allowed in and out without permission. You can't turn Gaza into a gas chamber with Jewish settlers there. So within Operation Cast Lead itself, no Jews were supposed to be left in Gaza, and that's made very explicitly. The wall was built in 2002. That came from the Sharon government. And then, of course, in 2006, Hamas won overwhelmingly the election on the Gaza Strip. Hamas was known as religious and extremely moral. In other words, they were considered incorruptible. The claim that Netanyahu would give money to these guys implies that Hamas would accept it, knowing full well that it would destroy a lot of their independence and it would destroy a lot of their reputation amongst the population. But of course, it is true that Mossad knew that Abbas would lose the elections that year. There is some truth to the fact that Israel was dividing Palestinians, although, again, the PA and Hamas have agreed far more than they have clashed. He doesn't need an invasion to justify flattening the region because he's done it many times before. Of course, you know, Hamas was always a terrorist organization in the Israeli mind. And they would keep Abbas in charge of the West Bank, and the elected Hamas government would be confined to the Gaza Strip. Again, we talked about the rationale behind that last week. Of course, there's been plenty of ground offensives in Gaza before, 2009, January 3rd specifically. And the IDF was looking forward to a drawn-out military operation. Barak, at the time, said this will not be easy and it will not be short. They're not expecting Hamas to cooperate. Again, this is just the Dagon plan, which called for an invasion of Palestinian-controlled territory by about 30,000 Israeli soldiers, with a clearly defined mission of destroying the infrastructure of the Palestinian leadership and collecting weaponry currently possessed by the various Palestinian forces and expelling or killing its military leadership. That's a quote from Ella Shulman. Chris Hedges, who used to work for the New York Times, wrote an article dated the 23rd of October, 2023. The very fact that he worked for the New York Times is very significant. He doesn't work there anymore, and we know why. And he makes the claim that many of us, I've certainly been making for 30 years, Israel is founded on lies. There's no relationship even to the Israelites of the Old Testament. They lie and say the Palestinian land was unoccupied. And even if it was occupied, they were so savage, there was no civilization there. The truth, of course, is that 750,000 Palestinians were forced to flee. The lie that it was the Arab armies that started the 1948 war, that saw Israel seize almost 80% of Palestine, is yet another, or that Israel faced annihilation in 1967, another lie. And in 67, forcing Israel to invade and occupy the remaining 22%, as well as land belonging to Egypt and Syria. That's their claim, anyway. Israel is sustained by several things. It's sustained by lies. It's sustained by misdirection. It's sustained by constant warfare. And it's sustained by the ignorance of the populations in the West, especially the Protestant so-called Christians. Michael Hoffman said that the IDF is targeting civilians because they know they can get away with it. Hedges was at the Gaza Strip. He published a series in the New York Times. And Hedges was the Middle East bureau chief back when they had bureau chiefs. He covered the war there for 2 decades and was there physically for 7 years. And the first thing that he notes, he said, you know, I learned a lot about explosive devices working with some of these people. And he says there is nothing in the arsenal of Hamas or Islamic Jihad that could have remotely replicated the massive explosive power of the missile that killed the 500 civilians at the Ahali Arab Christian Hospital in Gaza. And he makes the obvious point that if they actually had those kind of missiles, they'd be using them against Israel. Huge buildings in Israel would be rubble today. They don't have that capacity. The weapons that they have are third rate. The hospital thing, you know, they've been leveling hospitals since 1948. Or actually the war against mandated Palestine. The sound of the whistling, which in the video, many of you have seen it, you could hear it. But no Palestinian rocket makes that noise. The sound gives it away. Remember, what the Palestinians have in Gaza or anywhere else are, you know, 1970s old Soviet things. Whatever they can get their hands on, really. You could see them in the sky. They're slow. And they kind of free fall towards their targets. So when the Israelis are screaming about missile attacks, these are just lobbed over the, might as well be mortars. But they've been attacking the hospital, that specific one, the days leading up to the October 17 incident. The warning that was given by Israel to evacuate, according to the officials at the hospital, that they received their warning was, we warned you to evacuate twice. I'm not sure where these people were supposed to go. In fact, Israel demanded that all the hospitals in northern Gaza be evacuated. And many of you also know that the digital aid to the Prime Minister Netanyahu, Hananya Naftali, posted on Twitter, quote, Israeli Air Force struck a Hamas terrorist base inside a hospital in Gaza. end quote. And of course, that was a quote that was very quickly deleted. Hedges also notes that Israel has carried out 51 attacks on healthcare facilities in Gaza that have killed 15 healthcare workers, injured 27, and that's according to the WHO. Of the 35 hospitals in Gaza, 4 are not functioning at all, and only 8 of the 22 primary healthcare centers are partially functioning. And the WHO said that WHO before any of this started. Since he was actually there, it's the brazenness of the lies that he can't handle. He saw the shooting of an armed Palestinian. He interviewed witness after witness after witness. He obtained photographic and forensic evidence. It didn't matter. Jewish interests come first. Jewish control and Jewish power makes it at least highly likely that they'll never be brought to justice for this. It's very rare that any kind of legitimate claim to self-determination ends up this way. Zionism is complete destruction. And as Rabbi David Weiss, you know, an old friend of mine, the anti-Zionist rabbi, said, Zionism implies that Jews have to control the countries that finance it. Because there's so few of them, really. Israel lies because they're aware that the Jewish press around the world is going to parrot it. That means the IDF has no restraint, because as far as they're concerned, no one's watching. Same thing goes for the Ukrainians. What's left of that mercenary force, they could do as they please. They're aware that the press is going to cover for them. So they even have their own lexicon. You know, children killed by Israelis become children caught in the crossfire. They deliberately target civilian areas, and then they'll say, well, there was a bomb factory there in the hospital or at a school. The very fact that they destroy a Palestinian home means, in the minds of otherwise literate people, that this was a home of terrorists and there are no civilians in Gaza, as the Israelis have said over and over again. Supporters of Israel, this isn't a matter of differences of opinion. No one denies this. The only thing that seems to matter is whether or not it's okay when Jews do it. Jordan Peterson, who really is useless, he's made a living stating the obvious. Again, Michael Hoffman took him to task for telling Netanyahu to give him hell. Well, hell is exactly what they have and what they've had for some time. Chris Hedges, along with the cartoonist Joe Sacco, watched and filmed Israeli soldiers taunting and then shooting small boys in the Khan Yunis refugee camp in Gaza. They even attended the funerals. We had their names. We had the dates. We had the locations. Israel simply uttered that those two were never in Gaza and that they had made it up. And that's exactly what ran. The only reason that you had some mainstream criticism of Netanyahu was that because he brought these extremist Zionist parties into his coalition, he was imposing separatist and more traditionalist moral strictures all over the country, including in Jerusalem. You know, anti-feminist measures, you know, that kind of thing. And so suddenly it became okay to attack Netanyahu and the IDF in general. Now, when Israel gets caught lying, it promises an investigation. Again, I'm quoting Hedges here for the most part. But what do you expect of these investigations? You don't have an impartial investigation. It's very hard to even expect one. It's hard to expect the IDF ever to be put on trial, since they're simply carrying out the official ideology of the Zionist entity. Jews are completely different in Israel versus how Jews are outside of Israel. It's like they're two completely different people. Since 2001, that we know of, the Israelis have killed 20 journalists. And I say, well, that's a good start. They're not all bad. But the point is that there's no accountability for this. The Committee to Protect Journalists, which normally is a group of idiots, actually this very year, said immediately after a journalist is killed by Israeli security forces, officials often push out a counter-narrative to media reporting. Something like indiscriminate fire or whatever. One of the things that the Protestant fundamentalists will bring up is the international organizations that are meant to keep an eye on the situation in Israel. The Israelis refuse to cooperate, like the UN Human Rights Council. Well, in normal circumstances, yeah, I wouldn't cooperate with it either. The UN special agents, the rapporteur in the Palestinian territories since 67. The Human Rights Watch, the Israel and Palestine Bureau, used to be run by Omar Shakir in 2018. And I think you may have read that the group of communists who were protesting in Harvard, and remember, the Jews are attacking people against Israel for the sake of later plausible deniability if everything hits the fan. Anyway, I've gone way over my time. There's so much to talk about, but that's just a thumbnail sketch of what Zionism truly is. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.